I am 37. The 29th of April, 1990, to the 28th of April, 1991. Above. Where's the Tea Boy? By Giles Perkins. When I was 37 years old, the elderly gentleman was firmly part of my life. Have I mentioned the elderly gentleman? The elderly gentleman visited irregularly at first, always in his signature boots, turned-up jeans and work shirt, but quickly became a fixture. Looking back, which ironically, given the very nature of this book, you should never do, I could have read the signs and sometimes painted the words, but more of him later. My year was spent in the dark, in rooms with no windows, or driving up motorways after midnight. Days and nights sat behind the wheel of a white Ford Transit van or the console of an SSL desk, comforting with its ordered rows of knobs, faders and switches illuminated by VU meters and the glow of whoever was behind the glass. Days and nights, cutting, pasting, reimagining or rebuilding noises into orderly fashions. It was relentless. The elderly gentleman, clad in his signature boots, turned-up jeans and work shirt, told me once in the wee hours that these orderly noises were fleeting and would eventually disappear. The schedule was relentless, self-imposed maybe, necessary maybe, but I have always been drawn to the relentless, be it rain or work or the sound of a drill in a neighbour's loft. Did I mention the Tea Boy? Lugging the 24-track tapes, logging the mixes, making the tea. It was a team effort, us, them and the Tea Boy. I asked the elderly gentleman a question in the middle of one particularly dark night. But nothing sage was returned, just something about, whatever you think you are doing now will count for nothing in a very short time. When I was 37 years old, I'd been told about a web. Not a Peter Parker-type web, but some sort of other web. More a Tim Berners-Lee web. Did Tim Berners-Lee have an Aunt May? Was there a Mary Jane in his life? This web seemed important at the time. I mean, Germany was reunited when I was 37 years old. That seemed important too. The elderly gentleman seemed important too, visiting in his signature boots, turned-up jeans and a work shirt, sometimes with his mallets and chisels, sometimes with his roller and paint. The web, an electronic, ever-expanding, a ring of toadstools, felt like it could be seismic. Like the new Germany, the new Russia. Mycelium made manifest for an awaiting digital age. But what if that electronic mycelium put up more barriers under the illusion it was making more connections? I asked the elderly gentleman in the middle of another particularly dark night, but he illuminated nothing. Sometimes I had to travel north in the white Ford Transit van up the M6 over the viaduct spanning the canals of the Black Country before crossing the Mersey at the Thelwell, before heading to the borders and beyond. The elderly gentleman, clad in his signature boots, turned-up jeans and work shirt, told me for the first time about. The clues were there. I sometimes wondered if this digital ring of toadstools, this electronic mycelium, the one created by Tim Berners-Lee, would change what music was. What if everyone owned and created the music? Like Germany, it could be unified and free. Like the new Russia, or was that electronic mycelium just a bait, a juicy worm on a hook to make you feel connected, now that there are no longer any gatekeepers? All you had to do was make free content and you will be rewarded. You will be released. The living perch did not take the bait, however juicy was the worm. She swam in the waters of the Mersey under the Thelwall Viaduct. There's only so much you can do to make a record work. Sometimes the more you do, the less it works. I thought about that long and hard when I was 37 years old, probably more than any other year. The cutting, pasting, reimagining continued, with faces behind the glass, giving their own sounds to the record laid down by us on 24-track tape, loaded into the machine by the T-boy in the dark, illuminated only by the SSL console. Did we think about cultural appropriation then? Or were we just opening the gates to let things run free? Young hearts, run free. Never be hung up like the man and me. Sometimes in the dark, sometimes in the noise, sweat and dystopian carnage on the dance floor, I thought about the other former A&R man. The one who loves his trains, the one who's been lurking, the one who set up the copy left anonymous, the QLA, or was it the QAnon? He'd had some hits. He wrote a manual on how to make hits. Did he have his own elderly gentleman? Stock Aitken and Drummond, in brackets, SAD. Was taking its toll when I was 37 years old. Kylie and Jason were our bread and butter. But we had Sonia. She was fun. And big fun. Who I always thought weren't so fun. The Hit Factory. The SSL. The T-Boy. The toy trains were all at full speed. Waterman seemed to be mocking me. His last train from Waterloo was something the elderly gentleman had warned me about, clad in his signature boots, turned-up jeans and work shirt, whilst holding a chisel and a mallet with what looked like a bed in the haze. The hitman with her were my Saturdays. Up the M6, over the viaduct spanning the canals, sometimes in Mr. Smith's in Warrington, where the living perch swam in the Mersey, sometimes in clubs in other northern towns and cities. Waterman seemed to be mocking me again. His "It's Grinding in the North" had Wiley on vocals. Wiley, who'd been in a band called The Criminal Three, calling out a list of places that formed my very Saturdays. The elderly gentleman piqued my interest in Waterman and the QLF in a late-night missive. Wiley, who was once in the Criminal Three, would be replaced by Waterman in a later, more commercial mix. The elderly gentleman, complete with paint and rollers, urged me to think more about canals and viaducts, signs and words, and less about the hits. Michaela was nice enough as my foil, but I never thought her heart was in it. Off camera, she was chattering about nature, the real mycelium, the animals, the burns, the wide open spaces. I wasn't surprised when she later told me that the really wild show was calling. She'd go the way of our now famous T-boy and web meme Ginger Astley elsewhere. The hitman with her was performative. It paid the bills, but it was never a grinding northern meat market helping power the Hit Factory. Waterman's album, The Opaque Lounge, came out late in the year that I was 37 years old. It was a work of dark art, the QAnon's best to date, so said the elderly gentleman. Postscript. Dystopian. People love dystopia. People always want to buy dystopia. There will always be another season of The Handmaid's Tale on Netflix or Severance on Apple TV. As for SAD, sad, seasonally adjusted dementia.
Below. The Curlews Are Calling by Ali Fence. I remember hearing a curlew in Scotland a month after my 37th birthday. It called loudly somewhere near the bay, where the skies split between deep blue and orange. The call was a silver needle piercing through dark cloth, a direction distinct and clear. My foot raged in pain. I flexed it cautiously and unfurled my body in the back seat of the car. I had been sleeping in my car for a few weeks during May 1990. It was a consequence of a last-minute decision to leave London and travel north for a while. A modern pilgrimage. Will Milligan was the cause of this journey, I suppose. Will and I met at The State in Liverpool in late 1983, arguing and becoming friends over musical differences. Will died a few years later, sadly. But at this point, in 1990, he was still bright and alive. 6 days before my 37th birthday, Will had been visiting Wymondham, when his foot had dislodged a green glazed fleck sticking out of the mud. It was a fragment of a pottery face, dark expressionless eyes, and a slash for a mouth. A week later, while sitting in the pub drinking to commiserate my turning 37, Will showed me the fragment and explained it was a piece of a medieval face jug known as Grimston ware. The face would have curved round the rim of the jug, both as ornament and with a meaning now lost in time. An inaccessible communication. In the Middle Ages, the jugs had belonged in alchemists' vaults, the vessels for potions, and they had also served as cups in chapels. Poison, beauty, magic, and ritual. Will joked the face reminded him of me and handed it over as a birthday present of sorts. The fragment was hunched and hemmed in by a pottery jug that no longer existed. It seemed like a memory of the existence of the whole jug stopped the face uncrumpling. I laughed and dropped the dark green pottery face in my coat pocket as we continued drinking that evening. I can remember waking later at 3 a.m, sprawled on the floor in the front room of my flat. An emerging hangover was breaking in waves over hazy drunkenness. As I lurched upright to get a drink of water, unsteady in the darkness, I felt something crunch underneath me. A sharp pain surged through my right foot. Fuck. Fuck, fuck, fuck! Hopping and switching on the light, I examined my foot. It was bleeding. A needle-point shard of green pottery had buried itself in my heel. On the floor, where I'd stood in the darkness, was the piece of grazed green face, a pair of black eyes staring blankly out. I hobbled to the sofa and crashed out, waking up again sometime later in afternoon. My foot ached and pulsed. I remember it was a strange day. Jittery and restless. I wanted to walk somewhere. The shard in my foot felt like a compass needle guiding my direction. Without much thought, I got in the car and left London, heading north on the M1. Over the next few days and weeks, I fell into the following ritual. I would drive for a few hours, then park the car whenever it felt right to stop, and regardless of the time of day, I would walk and walk and walk, sometimes leaving the car behind for days and sleeping wherever I could. I travelled along an imaginary line, zigzagging through northeastern England and southern Scotland, Doncaster, Goole, Osgoodby, Bradford, Grassington, Saltburn by the Sea, Hexham, Jedburgh, Dunbar, Leith, Blackness Bay, all places where Grimston Weir is associated, though I didn't know it at the time. My footprints drew lines through the changing light and landscape. I walked from lakes reflecting like mirrors to hollowed-out industrial buildings with smashed windows and neon graffiti. I wandered through fields edged with oak trees and along streets of cramped brick houses that scowled and hummed with anger. The pottery shard in my right foot felt it was shearing into smaller pieces. It spread like tiny spores clinging to the imprints of my footsteps as I walked during those weeks. Billions of hafia bloomed in my wake. By day 23, I woke up somewhere near Falkirk, not far from the burn, hearing the curlew calling over Blackness Bay. My foot was swollen and I could hardly walk. I had no choice. I cut short the pilgrimage and returned to London in a lot of pain, nearly unable to drive. By summer, I was booked into St. Thomas Hospital for an operation on my foot. After several x-rays, doctors had determined a small fragment of bone had sheared off, likely caused by the walking I'd done that May. I needed to have an operation. They could not find any trace of pottery shards in my foot, despite my certainty that a sliver had wiggled its way in and was lying there like a sleeping dragon. The hospital room was clean and bare, and in an atmosphere of drugs and sickness, I slept. I dreamt of black, inky rain filling the holes made by my footprints on the ground, pooling into the heel prints. When I awoke, snow was falling outside. Thick flakes scurried like curlews, circling and swooping over a dark loch. It was the 2nd of August. A few days later, the snow had melted and had given way to the warmth of summer. An extraordinarily warm heat wave, as I remember. On the 4th of August, I was well enough to leave hospital but needed to use crutches for several weeks afterwards. I had a good recovery, though, mostly. The heel of my right foot still aches and twinges sometimes. Further medical examinations over the years have turned up nothing. Doctors tell me it's likely phantom pain. I still have the Grimston Weir face jug fragment. I keep it in my kitchen, next to my Bewley's tea caddy. I kept the crutches too. Wouldn't